would like to shortly welcome members from the department. Peter, the meeting has already started. welcome members from the department. I think in our today's agenda, we've got only one item, which, but in your presentation, we've distributed into two, which is disaster management centers and its operations, and also how the funds are being distributed at disaster, at those disaster centers. Members, we welcome you back from just a hectic day. We just started earlier today, but anyway, brought some enthusiastic celebrating our FA team, welcoming back home, sending them messages of encouraging them to do likewise or more than that on 2016. But also I would like to apologize from the department side that our program has been slightly changed because of today's business at Parliament. Hoping you received the message in on time. It didn't inconvenience your own program, so that we have scheduled it led us to schedule today's meeting for this time at 2. With those few words, in our last presentation that we received, and also the presentation we received from the department on disaster management, on disaster funding, it was when we were preparing our budget vote. And also we had some few provincial visits, like we were in KZN. And I think on that one you need to do a follow-up on check from the department side. Was there a move? Those communities have been assisted from that floods of Cyclone Irina. So I think on today's deliberations will emanate from that one. Maybe it will move from the last presentation and from today's one, so that we'll be able to deliberate on those matters. Without any waste of time, then I'll give over to you and you make some introductions to your team, then you get into the presentation. Then.
Good afternoon, Honourable Members, and thank you, Honourable Chair, for the opportunity to come to give an overview of the business that we are doing, and also to continue the discussion that we had at the previous meeting. The team that I have with me today are all the heads of the different sections, the chief directors, that are responsible for the different areas within the National Disaster Management Center. And I will be doing the presentation. Just to introduce myself, I'm Ken Terry. I head the National Disaster Management Center. And the team are here in support if there are any questions that that would emanate from that. And just to say that as part of the presentation, we have included the issues around the tropical storms that took place at the beginning of the year. And hopefully in the presentation, we'll be able to cover all the issues that the Honourable Chairperson has raised. I don't know if there's anything specific other than the introduction for us to start the presentation, Honourable Chair.
Secretary Sharon is telling me that there's an apology from the Minister that he won't be with us today. Maybe from members that I haven't received any apology. I think we are in full complement. You can continue.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The outline of the presentation is we'll deal with the purpose, we'll deal with the legislative mandate of the National Disaster Management Center. We'll have a slide or two on climate change adaptation, One of the other issues that we were asked to raise was the status of disaster management centers in the country, and quite a large chunk of the presentation will also be dealing with the funding for disaster management, the processes that we follow, and how we have disseminated funds up until now, and then we will do a conclusion. The purpose of the presentation is to report to the committee on the following: is our legislative mandate, the status of the centers, and the post-disaster funding. That is immediate funding, as well as the reconstruction and rehabilitation funding that takes place. The government is constitutionally responsible for disaster management, and that is taken up in Schedule 4 of the Constitution. Disaster management in South Africa is legislated. Regulated and legislated, which include but not limited to the Disaster Management Act 57 of 2000 and the National Disaster Management Framework of 2005. In terms of the Disaster Management Act, it makes provision for an integrated and coordinated policy for disaster management that focuses on the prevention and reducing of risk of disasters, emergency preparedness, rapid and effective response to disasters, and post-disaster recovery and rehabilitation, the establishment of centers in all three spheres of government. The framework provides for a coherent, transparent, and inclusive policy on disaster management. It introduces four key performance areas and enablers that are geared towards effective implementation of the Act. The powers and duties of the National Disaster Management Center include, but are not limited to, in terms of the general powers, the center must make recommendations on disaster funding and make such funding available. The Act is as an advisory and consultative body on issues concerning disasters and disaster management, and specialize in issues concerning disasters and disaster management. The communication links with disaster management role players, and that is not limited only within the sphere of government, but also with external stakeholders. Establish a disaster management and information system, and then we deal with prevention and mitigation. The center must give guidance to organs of state, the private sector, non-governmental organization, communities and individuals on ways in which to assess, prevent and reduce the disaster risk. The monitoring, measuring performance and evaluating disaster plans, mitigation and response initiatives. The center must monitor progress on the preparation of disaster plans and strategies, the classification and recording of disasters, and then the compilation and submission of annual reports. We also administer the Fire Brigade Services Act 99 of 1987. The Fire Brigade Service Act provides for the establishment, maintenance, employment, coordination, and standardization of fire brigade services and for matters connected thereto. There's a proclamation R153 of 1994 delegated the administration of the Fire Brigade Service Act to provinces, except Section 2 and 15 that deals with the Fire Brigade Board and regulations respectively. The Fire Brigade Service Act is currently under review to ensure that, amongst others, it is harmonized with all the other applicable legislation that there is. This is just an indication of the devastating effects of fires. Then in terms of the climate change adaptation, the current changes in climate call for increased investment and resources in local action for better adaptation. The increase in these extreme incidents that we've been experiencing over the past 2-3 years as a result of climate change put a huge strain on our public resources, and the need to declare and support disaster areas in the immediate crisis as well as during the long-term recovery. There's also a need to give priority to disaster management structures across all spheres of government for improved disaster risk reduction and the management to deal with the increase and intensity of the frequency of the extreme weather conditions that we've been experiencing. We also put a slide together that gives us some indication of the status of disaster management centers throughout the country. We recently conducted an assessment to determine the functionality of disaster management centers in the country. The results revealed varying degrees of functionality. The main cause, or the main variation that we do have, is the transition process to a standalone function of disaster management in all spheres of government has not been implemented at the same pace. taking into account that this function was primarily managed through the security structures in the past, and that related to the SANDF and the police that would take a lead role. The creation of a number of new municipalities also contributed to the slow migration process. The municipalities, obviously, post-94 had grown quite considerably to what it was previously. A program of support has been put in place to fast-track this transformation process to ensure that all the centers are fully functional. And that process of transformation is not limited only to the National Disaster Management Center that are providing support to the provinces and municipalities, but it's also the enhancement of the provincial disaster management centers and the district disaster management centers to fully support the structures below. The funding mechanisms in place for disaster management, the provincial and municipal disaster grant funding is there for immediate relief. This fund, the immediate relief fund, is to be utilized within 3 months or of the occurrence of a disaster. And then there's the reconstruction and rehabilitation funding, which is then from the contingency reserve from the Treasury, and this is for the more medium to long-term support. And then disaster prevention mitigative funding, which is specifically for sectors, and those are in the sector departments. Those are earmarked funds, and we'll give an indication of that as well. In terms of the Disaster Management Act, Section 56, Section 16 and 25, the following principles apply. The national and provincial and local organs of state may financially contribute to respond to efforts and post-disaster recovery and rehabilitation. The cost of repairing or replacing public sector infrastructure must be borne by the organ of state responsible for the maintenance of such infrastructure. In line with the disaster management framework, all organs of state must budget for disaster response and recovery costs. Once budget for response and recovery activities have been exhausted, the relevant organs of state may request financial assistance from national government. Provinces must be able to fund response and recovery from the equitable share through a process of reprioritization. This slide just gives an indication of the three spheres of government and the sections in the different legislation. In terms of the Municipal Finance Management Act, Section 29, the mayor of a municipality may, in an emergency or other exceptional circumstances, authorize unforeseen unavoidable expenditure for which no provision was made in an approved budget. And this is the mechanism that they can use to solicit funds to deal with immediate relief from disasters. In terms of the Public Finance Management Act, the MSC for finance in a province may authorize the use of funds from provinces revenue fund to defray expenditure in exceptional nature, which is currently not provided for, which cannot without serious prejudice to the public interest be postponed to a future appropriation by the provincial legislature. And then in terms of the Public Finance Management Act at national government level, the Minister of Finance may authorize the use of funds from the National Reserve Revenue Fund to defray expenditure of which exceptional nature, which is currently not provided for, which cannot without serious prejudice to the public interest be postponed to a future parliamentary appropriation of funds. The immediate relief funding, as I indicated, for a provincial and a disaster conditional grant funding, the funds are allocated in line with a grant funding framework as published in the Division of Revenue Act. The grant only came into effect during the 2011 financial year as a new grant for immediate disaster relief. The main objective is to proactively respond to immediate needs after disaster has occurred in court in order to deal with its consequences. What the Treasury has done in the initial allocation for immediate disaster relief grant, the amount of $1.85 billion over the MTF period was made available. The funding has been made available for the years 2011-12, it was $775 million. 12, the current financial year, it's $510 million. For the 13-14 year, it's $540 million. And the total amount comes to the $1.825 million. billion over the MTEF period. Currently this...
I'm sorry to interject you. I just wanted to check this one because during the budget vote presentation, I said why the allocation has gone down, having still have to experience issues of climate change and the response from those that team was here said it hasn't gone down. But can you please, I'm not a financial person or finance person, make me to understand. If you are saying 2011, 12, 2012, 13, those total figures there, I know if you say 775 minus 510, the difference there, it's 200 and something. Can you please explain to me?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. This is the amounts that the Treasury had made available. We didn't get an indication of why. We had spoken to them and we were hoping that they would be in the meeting with us today. They did get indication of that, of why they reduced the amount. In the initial discussion that we did have with them, they did indicate that this is immediate relief funding only. This is not for post-disaster reconstruction and rehabilitation. This is just for immediate relief funding, and the immediate relief funding is funding that is made available within 3 months of the disaster. And they had worked on the immediate relief funding projections that had been paid out in the first year, and they had reduced it based on that. But as I'd indicated, I don't want to give that as a conclusive indication to the committee because it is something that they would have to, because it was done unilaterally, it was not something that was done in consultation with us. Just to say that currently this money is appropriated and it is indicated on the...
Maybe before you continue, could you please assist me in the question that I'm asking, because I know you know finances, and try and check how are you going to craft the question that you... I can get an explanation.
Sorry, Chair, I thought I heard the explanation. The answer is we don't know. Ask Treasury. That's the answer. So I suppose to that extent, you know, that's all we can do. I don't know. Not sure.
You can continue.
Honourable Chair, just to say at the SCOA meeting, this issue was also raised, and the DDG responsible for the budget vote at the National Treasury did write a letter to the chairperson of SCOA giving a breakdown of exactly how he had perceived it, and what we will do is we'll also make sure that the chair gets a copy so to distribute to this committee as well. As I was indicating, that this amount is currently indicated on the cooperative governance budget vote. And the challenge that we do have, and it takes us back at the end of the financial year where it shows a substantial underspending if this amount is not spent. And obviously you can't spend these funds unless there is a disaster, because it is directly related to disaster funding. And in recent discussions with the Treasury, they are rethinking the way that they're putting this money forward, and they're going to be putting it on the Treasury vote, because ultimately they are the final approving authority to release these funds. And so that this amount would not be indicated on COCTA's budget in future. The reconstruction and rehabilitation funding, these funds are requested from the National Treasury, that's the contingency reserve. The requests are made in line with the normal budgetary requirements during the beginning of a new financial year or during the budget, the adjusted budget process. The reconstruction and rehabilitation for 2010-11 disasters, as we will recall, there were 8 provinces that were affected by the 2010-11 floods and storms. The total cost of the verified damages amounted to $3.8 billion, of which in the 2011-2012 financial year, $752 million was distributed in the MTEF process. These are not immediate relief funds. These are funds for post-reconstruction and rehabilitation. This is just an indication, Honourable Chair, of the kinds of disasters that there were at the beginning of the year, and this relates specifically to Mpumalanga, where we had typically the top left-hand side is the mud houses that some of the people were living in that were, through the rains, were really damaged. And we had put up tents up there for immediate relief, and within 2 months, the provincial government from their own funding had rebuilt a proper RDP house, and this is just an indication of where the province was really committed to make things work and assist us that this had happened. This was within 2 months. This is also just an indication, some of the bridges that had been washed away, where the minister had actually visited, and the construction of the new bridges had in fact taken place. And this will relate to some of the slides that we do have on the monitoring and evaluation, where in the past where funds have been made available, and you go back after a year and you would find that some of the reconstruction has not taken place, and we are now pushing to make sure that if we allocate money that it is dealt with immediately as immediate relief. The reconstruction and rehabilitation for the 11-12 disasters, there were 4 provinces that were affected by the floods. KwaZulu-Natal in all 10 district municipalities and the metro, in Mpumalanga in the Elatleni district municipality, Limpopo at the Mopani district municipality, and in the Western Cape, the Eden district municipality. The total verified cost of the damages that we have just finalized, the initial amount or the current cost is 1.5 billion. That's the reconstruction and rehabilitation over the medium and long term. And the proposal for the financing of these damages over the MTF period are set out as follows. This is just for the current financial year, how it's being done. And these are the costs, the breakdown of the 1.5 billion. And this, the cabinet memo has been prepared, and this will be going to the Treasury Committee and cabinet on the 20th of September for approval. And after approval of this amount, which would come from the contingency reserve, the funds will be made available over the MTF period. Obviously, it is incumbent on the provinces and the municipalities where the disasters have taken place that we verify the amounts. They've got to give us the business plans of how they're going to be phasing this in and doing all this so that we can make sure that the amounts allocated over the MTF period are sufficient to do the work. This slide is quite an important slide that we thought that should be brought to the Portfolio Committee. There's an amount of 254 million that's been allocated to the listed departments to deal with disaster mitigation and prevention. The Department of Social Development over the MTF period, there's an amount being appropriated of 7 million. Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, the earmarked funds there is 190 million. And the Department of Water Affairs have got 57 million. And this is within those line function departments and to deal with the responsibilities as indicated for disaster mitigation and prevention. Honourable Chair, in conclusion, the Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs has committed to enhancing the capacity of the NDMC. As you could see from the team that is over here, it's enhanced as it is already. Compared to what it was in the past, to meet all the requirements set out in the Act. And this includes, as I'd indicated, one of the more critical aspects as defined in the Act that has not been there before, and this is to create a system for monitoring and evaluation that will ensure that the processes of immediate relief and post-reconstruction and rehabilitation is implemented as intended. And the process has also been put in place to substantially decrease the time it takes to assist with the release of immediate relief funding. One of our big success stories has been with the Limpopo province and Mpumalanga at the beginning of the year, where we were able to, within 2 months, have done all the verifications and paid out the immediate disaster relief funding. We paid out an amount of 47 million for Mpumalanga and 15 million for Limpopo. And that has been the success story has been a cooperative governance story. The NDMC on its own was not in a position to do this from where we are sitting. It really took a huge effort from ourselves and from the province and specifically the heads of department that were really committed to making sure that we're able to release the funds immediately so that those people that were affected can be dealt with in a speedily way and to make sure that everything is done according to the Act. Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think that, just in closing, that the Minister stated at the Understanding Risk Forum, and we are also very pleased that some of the members of the Portfolio Committee attended the Understanding Risk Forum, which highlights a number of these things, where the Minister's closing slogan was that disaster management is everybody's business, and the success of disaster management can only happen if everybody participates. It's not something that the NDMC as an entity or a small group of people there within the Department of Cooperative Governance can manage on its own. Thank you.
Thanks for the presentation. Honourable members, let's get into discussion. I'll recognize Honourable Bonhomme, Honourable Smith, Honourable Boinamo, Honourable Nelson, Honourable Nkosi Mandela, Honourable Steenhuisen, Honourable Sekgalo Diswai.
Yeah. Madam Chair, thank you for the briefing. It's quite good. My concern is that is the ongoing education of these communities with the climate change. As you see lately, there have been more flare-ups of fires at the mining and formal sector. Is the education of these communities ongoing?
Thanks, Honourable Bonhomme. Honourable Smith?
Chair, a few questions. Well, thanks for the presentation first. It was a rapid fire. Really had time to cut it down my notes, but still, that's cool. First of all, I'd like to know, you mentioned, you know, you've done some sort of assessment of the centre and so on, but yourselves, or maybe the national capability to respond to disasters, how would you assess that, including the institutional capacity in yourselves? Has that been measured? Is there a definitive statement that says we are, you know, 90% ready for anything or 10% ready? Do you have any, because I have no way of knowing, really, except I suppose in terms of your response to natural disasters. But I'd like to know if there have been formal assessments and what the outcome would be of that. And as a country, basically, how ready are we for anything? Okay, the disasters like floods and things, I think, are much easier to respond to than things like climate change. So I presume you have some sort of system where you say, you know, we're able to respond more easily to this than to that, and we have maybe a longer-term approach to certain issues than others. I don't know. You mentioned the disaster centres and the extent of functionality of them varying, but it would be useful to have some sense of how much this varies. I mean, you could be talking about 80% are utterly useless, and 20% are great. I've got no idea what it means. Could you give us some indication of how functional they are statistically? This grant funding, the immediate grant funding in 3 months, you know, you want to speed it up. You gave the example of Mpumalanga, 2 months, which is great. But how long has it been in practice? And at the end there, the final conclusion where you say you want to speed it up, what is the actual target that you would like it to be by the time you've got all your processes in line? There's a statement that you make somewhere there that all organs of state are required to budget for disasters. Who's responsible for ensuring that happens? I mean, Parliament is an organ of state, for example. We're an organ of state here. I've got no idea whether Parliament's got a budget for disaster. Transnet, Portnet, SAA, these are all organs of state. The SOEs are all organs of state, I presume, too. Do you have any role to play in determining anybody else's budgets in response to this imperative that they're obliged to comply with? This grant of $1.8 billion, I really agree with the idea that it gets located in Treasury, not with yourselves, but could you just explain how it's actually accessed? I mean, when a disaster happens, do you require Treasury's approval to access certain, you know, exactly what process, take us through the process by which you have a problem, you're responding to, and how you get the money. I know this is something we, as a committee, fought for donkey's years, to have a dedicated pool sitting there all the time ready to be used. And the government's response was very unfavourable for a long time, so I'm really pleased this is happening. I'd like to know what happens. The question the Chair was asking earlier about 775 down to 510 down to 540, of course the figure is 34% decrease in the second year. Now, I don't know, but it's maybe linked to this question. You know, the Act was passed 10 years ago, so now we've had a series of disasters. I don't know whether we have a disaster every year, or we have 2 disasters a year, or 10 disasters a year. How are they sort of spread throughout this decade, And you know, how does the funding required maybe link to the frequency of disasters? And then the last thing, didn't we make provision in the Act originally for a system of volunteers? And what has happened to that whole notion of volunteers being recruited, trained, and deployed to assist in disasters? Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Slide number 5, disaster grant for immediate relief. The slide talks of the disaster from provincial and municipal level, but now it says this fund can be accessed within 3 months of the occurrence of disaster, and I find 3 months too long after people have been struck by disaster. Why should people wait for so long when money is there and it can be spent? Why should the people be left for so long without getting assistance? That's the first one. The other one is largely a comment. You know, South Africa has seen a lot of disaster caused by fire, particularly this year, where farms were ravaged by fire and animals died. The farmers lost lots of grain and animals. And this is nothing new. It happens every year. Now, the fire has even moved into the cities. Wherever there's a piece of grass, that piece of grass is torched. Can't the people who are dealing with disaster funds begin to look into the causes of this? Because some of them are human caused, they're not just natural. And people should take responsibility for torching the grass and be put in jail. We have a country next to us called Botswana. You will never see felt fire in Botswana because there's respect of rule of law, and people know they'll be held accountable if they touch the grass. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. I've also got a few that I want to pick up on, Jim. I think at some stage, I think it was when we were in KZN, with Irina, we were told that, you know, the issue of the felt fires and so on. My question is, I pick up now that the Fire Brigade Services Act is being worked on, but how far in the process is it? Because I think at some stage we said, seeing that the Disaster Management Act is being worked on, shouldn't the two run concurrently because they have a direct bearing on each other? So if we can just be informed of the process and if they speak, well, I picked up that they are speaking to each other. I also want to pick up on this municipal and provincial grant, which is accessed within 3 months. Does this include the immediate intervention? Or, for instance, where social development goes in, where the tents go up, and would that come out of this 3 months, this particular grant? Or, for instance, social development, would they have their own funds to deal with social relief of distress, for instance, does it all come out of this fund from the various departments? For my own clarity, Chairperson, the Reconstruction and Rehabilitation Fund, would this be for infrastructure that was damaged, whether it be your major infrastructure, your smaller infrastructure within the municipality? Would it go for, let's say, for instance, something that we picked up on our oversight visit, houses that were mud houses that you, for instance, they were RDP houses that these people should long before have moved into, but didn't have roofs on. So if these, and I think they were standing for about 5 years already. So would it go to finish off those type of things, or would it be only for the infrastructure that was damaged in the... Because what I'm actually trying to say is a large portion also comes in because of maintenance that has not been done. So where there's been no maintenance on particular... None of that then comes into play. Would it just go for everything that needs to be done with regard to infrastructure? Jefferson, and then also the issue of municipal funding, that municipalities should fund. Is there any differentiation? Your bigger municipalities can obviously. Your metros can budget versus a small rural municipality that doesn't have a revenue base. So would there be differentiation from the department side to assist those municipalities, because those would never be able to budget for disaster? And then I picked up something on slide 22. Let me just see. I think that one comes back to housing. Human settlements, number of damaged infrastructure, 7175. Jefferson, the element of poor workmanship, I would like the department to speak on that. And the element of where a RDT house has been extended and then damaged within a house they dealt with, because that was an issue the last time. And then, Jefferson, my last comment. I think we've asked, since we've come back from KZN, just after we got back from KZN, we asked for a report on the submissions that were made to disaster management, to the department, on all requests that have been made so far, and what has been released to provinces, to municipalities. We've asked for a schedule on that, and that is still outstanding. And then we'd ask them also just to speak on the monitoring and evaluation after these funds have been dispersed, whether it be to provinces or to national, to municipalities. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Nelson. Honourable Nkosi Mandela.
Thanks, Chair. I think, Chair, maybe issue of clarity. Do disaster management centers exist? For one, if we look at slide 12, it talks to ensuring that the centers are fully functional. And I'd like to know, in this case, the Eastern Cape Disaster Management Center, is it fully functional? And to come back to Honorable Boinang's question, probably on the issue that disaster management, it takes within 3 months of occurrence of a disaster to access the funding for relief. In Naidutwa as well as in Mvezo, we had a tornado in 22nd of December 2010. We still yet to get any support, and would like to know who actually takes responsibility for that, who oversees that these families that have found themselves affected are really assisted. Are they supposed to sit for 2 years without any support? I mean, if you look at most of the families there, their houses collapsed, and there's no support system in place. So I'd really like to understand what is the role of these disaster management centers, and what support do they render to those communities? Thank you.
Honourable Machoba, I will recognize you after I finish the round. I'll go the site, Honourable Steenhuisen.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson. A lot of the questions I wanted to ask have been asked already, but I have a few left. District management plans, who's responsible for the assessment of these district management plans to show that not only are they viable response plans, but that there is infrastructure and ability to actually implement those plans in light of disaster. So what sort of stress testing is put onto those plans to see if they're effective? Then in terms of the municipal fire services, certainly I know that there was a couple of years ago somewhat of a crisis in terms of fire services at a municipal level, in terms of equipment, personnel, training and resources. And at the time there was a standard that was used in terms of, I think it was concentric circles, that would measure response times. I want to know what standard we're using to measure whether we have capacity, sufficient capacity, at a municipal level to meet challenges, particularly around fire services and response time, and what is the status? Does the department have a national handle on the status in each municipality of the fire service in terms of equipment, tenders, and those the water carrying type, not the entrepreneurial type, and other equipment that's used to fight fires? And then what level of coordination does the department facilitate, if it does at all, between district municipalities and local municipalities? Because I know there's been tensions that have arisen over various disasters around who actually takes control in the situation. You have the district municipality, which says it's responsibility in terms of the Structures Act, but then you have a local municipality who actually owns the fire engines and the personnel, saying, well, actually, we're in charge. And it led to problems around coordination. So if you could perhaps shed some light on what measures we put in place today to deal with those particular type of coordination problems. Thank you, Madam Chair. For now, that's it.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. Most of the questions which I wanted to ask have been touched, but I want to emphasize on, will the department be able to tell us how far are they with the KwaZulu-Natal disaster? Because while we were there, we found that there were some results of disasters from previous disasters, and one would really want to know, where are they? Because at the end of the day, as the portfolio committee, while we have visited, we owe those communities some report, because I think we want to really report to them where are they. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks. Honourable Major.
Thanks, Chair. I'm covered by my colleague. But my mind is just to emphasize when they were in case, let's say, like if you check the slide in 19,
in this regard, I was trying to page back to my notebook
to check whether, because we received the representation late, but anyway, members managed to get into some questions of clarity, so that we, at the end of the day, all of us will see whether we are moving forward or we're still at stagnant stage. All in all, I would like to ask a question of saying, if you can maybe just roughly say to me the total allocation of your department. Is it satisfactory for now? I'm asking this question as a person who's a public representative who's doing oversight and monitoring over the legislation that are in place. Are you at a national level, maybe when monitoring to provinces, complying with the Disaster Management Act, which says each and every district must have a center which is functional and have some resources? All the provinces and all the districts, are they having those centers? According to the budget allocation that we are having, is it satisfactory that you can be able to disseminate to provinces, maybe to assist them, and also down to municipalities? Because in our last presentation, I think we made a recommendation of saying that we must end up making sure that each and every municipality at least have a Smolaniana center that will just go in and assist in those incidences that happened haphazardly in those places. Seated where I'm seated in Mpumalanga, in Mkondo municipality, where I was born in Amsterdam, my neighbors, I think it's 2 weeks ago, two in a shuttle just got burned, and the person there died inside in that fire, and there were no assistance or any of a fire brigade to come and assist the neighbors to come in and blew away the fire. So that means then even in municipality, at municipal level, there is a huge health hazard whereby people are not assisted. We had one here in Western Cape almost every year they are being attacked by such incidences. I just want to check from your side, is there any strength from those centers who are there? They are resourced, they are so functional, or what? And also, I just want to check in your systems. When we were meeting with province, especially in KZN, provincial departments are saying it takes long. Even in our meetings, we raised this issue when doing this system or rule that is in place of doing evaluation before you do evaluation, you check how much damage has been done, and it takes long. So in that regard, is there any, I know from our side we are legislators, we need to come with some amendments if our laws are not implemented. They are blocking you not to do your work, but on your side you haven't said anything about that. But provinces are saying even this interaction between the national department and provinces, they are saying it's very difficult to get your interaction. From now seated where seated, is there any improvement? In our last meeting, we spoke about the old incidences that members have already alluded to. I just want to check, there were some quotes from Eastern Cape, quotes from Northern Cape, quotes from KZN. I just want to check, because we even raised in our last meeting, is there any trace back that as a department you manage to go and investigate and come up with some solutions? Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll deal with those matters that I can conclusively deal with myself, and then we will rely on some of the colleagues that deal with the functional areas directly to assist. The education aspect is an ongoing. We have in one of the chief directorates, we have a specific section that is their main focus, and it's headed by a director. Their main focus is about ongoing education and advocacy, and that takes place on an ongoing basis, and that's somebody that's their full-time function. So that the advocacy and the education process is ongoing.
Educating who?
That's the communities, and that's at a provincial and at a municipal level. I'm sure Mori will give a little more indication of that, of exactly how they go, but that advocacy is taking place. What the minister has also asked us to do is to include the indigenous knowledge as well, and that is how we take this down into the community leadership as well to assist. And there's been, and I'm sure she will give some indication of how we've been dealing with that. Just to say the assessment capacity in terms of all the centres, to put that as a percentage, is going to be quite difficult right now. The short version of what we have done is not based on any empirical foundation, and we would like to do that more comprehensively to be able to give a proper statistic of that. The targets that are set in the Act and whether we can in fact achieve all that with the current the status of the NDMC, which has been hugely understaffed. It was up until the end of last year. There was it's only since January that we've been able to employ a few more people, but it's not possible with the small amount of people that we do over there to deal with all these issues. And as I did indicate, the current minister is committed to making that work. And for instance, the critical thing that has been outstanding is up until now, there's been no form of any monitoring and evaluation that takes place. Funds were paid out, and the reliance was on the provinces and the municipalities to spend the money on what was given, and there's been no follow-up or feedback on that. We are creating the bank. There's a chief director now, and the capacity is being put together so that we can make sure, and it also relates to one of the questions that one of the honourable members have raised, is the minister, after the floods in January, actually went physically to some of the sites to see, and these photographs that we have are where the minister in fact was to see for himself how it is happening. And the fundamental question that he did ask the municipal managers, that he did ask the MECs, is this bridge that's been washed away, when was it built? What were the standards that were used to build this bridge to make sure of resilience and to make sure that they can withstand these floods if they do come? And you do find that some of them are temporary structures that were just built, and a truck brings in a couple of arches and they put them down and they put some sand over and they regard that as a breach. And those were some of the issues that the minister had raised. And he had then asked all the municipalities and the provinces to go and find the documentation of the current breaches and the structures that are there, when they were built, what were the specifications they were built according to, because the minister did raise to the actual provinces and departments that immediate disaster relief funding is to assist people that because of the current situation they are adversely affected. But it cannot be, you can't be using disaster relief funds for money that was earmarked for maintenance of roads and maintenance of bridges and maintenance of houses. Now you're using disaster money to deal with that, because you're limiting your pool that you have to deal with issues that should have been dealt with by the provinces and the municipalities in maintaining their structures and their systems. And it is true, as one of the honorary members have indicated, that you do find RDP houses that were built and not completed, and that have been damaged further by weather situations that would normally not have been damaged. And the minister's intention was that's not what disaster relief funding is for. The Department of Human Settlements has to account for why these houses are not being completed. And in their own budgets that are allocated to them, where is the money going? Why is it not happening? Because, as I did indicate, the immediate disaster relief and post-disaster reconstruction is for those communities that had the infrastructure was there, and because of the storms it's been damaged, that they should get first preference. And the minister was quite adamant that unless the provinces and municipalities can give an indication that they had put their money where their mouth is, they had made sure that the roads are maintained properly, and they had made sure that the infrastructure is maintained properly, he would find it difficult to just release funding for that. We also do find that, and this is, to verify that becomes very difficult, that you would find that a tropical storm would come and because of winds that have blown, there were three or four houses that were on the side of the hill that were badly damaged. And because the communities know that there's disaster relief funding comes, the initial reports come that there's three houses damaged. In a week's time when you get there, there's 50 houses that are damaged. So that does happen, and that's why the verification is so important, because the engineers can in fact determine whether that is a deliberate demolition or it was on account of the weather. The funding via the National Treasury and all organs of state, the access, that the funding for construction and development is not part of disaster management. It's to correct if something has gone wrong. And our biggest challenge is always to make sure that, for instance, just by way of an example, using the Department of Human Settlements, that they've got a plan to build X amount of houses. And they conclude a quarter of those houses. When a disaster comes, then they think that there's an easy access to funding to complete that process because it is now under the disaster. And those are some of the challenges that we do face. And the sector departments do receive funding for the infrastructure. I'm sure one of the colleagues will speak to the issue of the volunteers. The issue of over the past 10 years, what we will do is, Honourable Chair, some of the issues that we would not have direct answers for, we will commit that within 7 days we will give a written report on those and a written reply to some of the questions that are raised, because we don't have all the information with us right now, and some of those will be, and to give a projection what is the level of the disasters over the past 10 years. All of us sitting over here have not been there longer than a year and a half, and off the cuff to give that information would be quite difficult, so it's going to take a bit of research to make sure that information is available. The issue of the immediate disaster relief funding within 3 months, the Act says that you must access it within 3 months. It doesn't mean you have to wait for 3 months to do that. And the access to immediate disaster relief, there's a limitation of 3 months. And if there's a disaster that happens and it is declared by the municipality and the province immediately, it can be done within a much shorter period. The tendency when the majority of the people see the 3 months, they think you wait 3 months for that. That's not so. As indicated, and the MEC did even indicate that in the NCOP, in the budget vote, that in Mpumalanga, within a month, we had concluded that business. The disasters happened. They were declared. Unfortunately, the Act is quite clear of the process that has to be followed because of the funding available. So if all put shoulder to the wheel and the NDMC is committed, we assist in any way, within a month we make the funds are actually released. So the 3 months is, the limitation is immediate release is within the 3 months, but it doesn't mean it takes 3 months to get those funds released. And obviously a lot of the funding is the intention of the Act and the way it is put out is that, and one of the honourable members raised the issue of some municipalities are in a better position than others, especially if you can't compare a local municipality that's in a very secluded area to a metro, and that is exactly what the Act does make provision for. If you are in a position where there's a municipality that has absolutely no resources, then the resources will be made available through the relief funding. The intention is that the from a local to a district to a municipal to a provincial level is that they must reprioritize their own funding and support whatever support is needed immediately. It's only when all those avenues have been exhausted that we would go to the NDMC or the national funding to deal with it. And I think that is that is to give some level of surety is that we are quite committed. Where you do go to a very rural municipality, that if there is a real, there's immediate relief funding that would go to them. In terms of the fire brigade, honourable members and honourable chairperson, we'll allow Anae to give some information on that. But the majority of these questions relate primarily to the reasoning for us to review the Act. And the Act is being reviewed precisely to bring it in line with the National Disaster Management Act, because currently the NDMC has got no jurisdiction over that Act. There's the Fire Control Services Board, which the Minister chairs, and there's specific aspects that relate to the Board. But in terms of how their operations are run, it is in terms of the Constitution, it's at a municipal level. There the decisions are taken, there they decide what, and at the district level, there they decide what fire engines are being bought, and they determine the standards. And it's very difficult, and that's why the change of the Act is happening, so that there can be an oversight role from us, so that there can be policies and there can be regulations issued to regularize this, so that you don't have a municipality buying a fire engine that relates to a more urban type of fire situation, and what they do need is something that will deal with felt and forest fires, for instance. That's just by way of an example, and how we'll deal with that. The disaster management plan issue is something that I can also relate to. In terms of disaster management plans, the municipal plans are there's oversight from the districts, which does a coordination, and then the province does a coordination of all the plans, and their primary role is to make sure that there's oversight and to make sure that the plans meet the requirements of the specific area that where disasters and processes need to be put in place to circumvent any sort of a disaster. And it would vary. The Western Cape deals with fires in the Fynbos. The Western Cape have got and Gauteng have got nuclear reactors, and there are constantly exercises that are run to make sure, just by way of example for the nuclear reactors, twice a year, there's exercises that are run to see what the state of readiness are in case of a nuclear disaster. And this also relates to the question that was raised around our sector departments, the parastatals that are involved, the issue raised of the airports. AXA has got their own disaster management internally at the airports company to make sure that if there's any disasters that happen around aircraft and stuff, and we have a national advisory forum for disaster management, and they're all participants over there. So we do have access to that. The one part of the legislation that helps us quite effectively is that the Disaster Management Center has legally the power to get access to any act or any preparedness processes and programs for disaster management from any entity, irrespective of who they are. Sometimes if somebody would like to get information from the Weather Service or the Geosciences, it's done under payment. The NDMC, our Act, makes provision that we can access any information at any time, and the organizations can't refuse that information to us. So there are mechanisms in the Act. I want to just deal with the second last and the last issue before I allow the colleagues to deal with it, is the issue of KZN. At the previous meeting, we did commit, and we prepared quite a comprehensive document for the Portfolio Committee, after the Minister had indicated at the previous Portfolio Committee, and that was in fact submitted. So we will make sure that document is again distributed. It is quite an extensive document, and which gives the full details of the whole issue around KZN, what are the processes that we've put in place to make sure that if there were any issues that need to be corrected, that are being corrected, and a full plan of how that is being done. So we will just follow up with the Secretariat immediately after the meeting, just to make sure that if that document hadn't been submitted via the process as we had agreed, as far as I recall, at the last meeting, the Minister did indicate that some of the issues that we would respond to in writing, and that was in fact done. So we will just make that information available, but some of the colleagues can speak to that. Then the allocation for the department to ensure its own compliance, Honourable Chair, no, the resources are not sufficient. And the way that we are dealing with it, the Minister has also signed our initial feasibility for the National Disaster Management Centre to become a government component to make sure that the funding allocated to the NDMC, which in one of the aspects in future is to make sure that the NDMC is appropriately funded and that we have the ability to enforce the Act the way it should be and to create the necessary infrastructure and human capital to be able to deal with this. And this is an ongoing process, and we are in close discussion with the National Treasury and the DPSA to make sure that we can adequately fund and staff the NDMC and also our resources. Currently, we're sitting in the same building as the Department of Cooperative Governance with a very limited space, and these are some of the issues that we are in. So in terms of resources, no, but we're really trying to make sure that there's compliance in terms of what is required from the Act with the resources that we have. Chair, I think I'm going to ask Mori to deal with some of the questions that she's, and then Mohanwa, and then Anay.
Thanks, Chairperson. I will respond with regard to the first question on the issue of education and training of communities. Just to confirm that as NDMC, we have a directorate that is dealing with that, and what we are doing is that we are approaching that with different sector departments in an integrated way, whereby mostly in winter season, training and awareness campaigns are targeted mostly on fire issues, and the target audience is our communities who are vulnerable, because what we are doing is that we are trying to ensure that all the different risks that are exposed to are dealt with in that way to build resilience amongst them. And then what we are having is that we have different information that we have published. That information, it targets different risks. Your lightning conductors, conducting floods, you know, flash floods, fires. So we have that kind of information whereby we support the provinces and the municipalities when they conduct that kind of awareness campaigns. And lately we had two workshops that were targeting councillors in Eastern Cape and also in Northern Cape. The other question with regard to the disaster recovery and rehabilitation, there was a question that was asked with relation to whether the funding, are we targeting the infrastructure that has been damaged by the disasters or maintenance of infrastructure? We are targeting the infrastructure that has been damaged by the disasters only. I think that's the two questions that I can have covered.
Thank you, Chair, and Honourable Members. Following the visit that we made in KZN, KZN, National Treasury and NDMC met, and what we did was to map out the processes which were followed that the KZN Provincial Department had followed in terms of submitting all the requests. And some of the findings were that these three departments in some of the areas, proper processes were not followed according to the Act. However, it was resolved in that meeting that NDMC, National Treasury and KZN had, that KZN would provide NDMC with all data for all the damaged infrastructure that happened before 2010, and all that information was submitted to the NDMC. And what the NDMC did then was to ensure that a verification process is done. And the verification process that we have just concluded now included even the disasters that happened during the IRINA. So we have just concluded now. We managed to verify over 6,000 houses, and that includes the previous ones and other infrastructure like schools, education. So what we have done now is that the reports, as the head has presented, the reports have been received, and a submission is going to be presented in Parliament. That submission has already been concluded. So this is how we resolved that the KZ issue be attended to and be concluded. And Madam Chair, I must say that it was also realized that during that time, some of the funds, this came with National Treasury, some of the funds were distributed directly from National Treasury to the provincial sector departments without the knowledge of the NDMC and the PDMC. And what we have put in place now is that whatever funds that are distributed to provinces, National Treasury will communicate also to us so that we can also be able to follow the rents that are being distributed to the provinces. And that matter will now be concluded, Chair, when it is presented to Cabinet for approval. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. And just in response to the question on the fire services legislation, the Fire Brigade Services Act is one of the really old order acts. It was already promulgated in 1987, so it really needs a complete overhaul. So we are in the process of doing that, and currently the National Disaster Management Center is only responsible to deal with fire services regulations and the Fire Brigade Board. So our role is very limited, and with the review of the legislation, we want to ensure that we introduce the role for the NDMC on monitoring, oversight, strategic direction, coordination, capacity building in support of the provinces and the municipalities. So that is really the intention. In terms of the time frame, together with the review of the Disaster Management Act, because it is such a comprehensive process of rewriting the current act, it will take a little bit longer. So we will have a discussion document which we are working on currently, and next year we are planning to have a white paper available. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, the one question that I have left to last to try to respond to one of the Honourable Members, and the question was, are we ready? From where I'm sitting, Chair, if we have to follow the letter of the Act, I would not say that we are ready. But I think in terms of all the structures that are available to us within government, if there were any major disaster that were to happen, with the resources from the security services, which include the SAPS, the SANDF, the municipalities in terms of fire brigades and everything, I think we would be able to deal with any major disaster that would happen. Just to also indicate that other than the storm-related acts, storm-related disasters that could happen, as I did indicate, that most of the organizations, for instance, the deal with flights, the airports companies, have got quite good disaster management plans in place, and they are geared, and these are tested on a regular basis. In terms of ESCOM and the nuclear plants, these are the plans to form any form of mitigation are in place, and they are tested biannually. What we would do, Honourable Chair, and we will raise the issue with the City of Cape Town and in Gauteng. When they do the next exercise, we will then also extend an invitation to some of the Portfolio Committee members to be part of the simulation, and then they can have a clear understanding of how these simulations work and how the readiness of the, mostly the parastatals are. In terms of Transnet, they've also got plans in place to deal with the major rail issues and the those kinds of things. So I'm convinced that if we had to have a serious disaster in the country right now, that with the resources that we do have available to us, we would be able to mobilize those resources and deal with any issue that there is. But ultimately, we want to get into a position where it's a functional form of the NDMC, and we would be able to, would want to be in a position where we can put a plan forward for any contingency. Currently, it's a bit fragmented, and that's one of our major objectives, is to pull this together. What Ms. Mabidilala did not elaborate on is she's the our monitoring and evaluation specialist that's in the NDMC, that is one of our major projects as well currently, is to make sure that our capacity to follow, she calls it following the rand, is to make sure that the issues of building materials and materials that are bought to support families and communities when disasters have happened do not lie in the felt for 5 years and nothing is being done. We want to create a system where we can report properly and we can follow up to make sure that, obviously, we want to be able to account for all the money that we are spending, but to make sure that our communities out there are getting the kind of services they need in terms of disaster management. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thanks. Maybe as my follow-up, okay, I'll recognize you. In your... this is in your education program on awareness to communities. I just want to check, taking into recognition of what has been presented, that you are understaffed, that's why now you are trying to establish yourself to get into other programs. I just want to check why you target only winter to do your programs, and also, if possible, if we can be furnished with your programs and your material used and your manuals that you used, or those flyers that you used to educate people. Peter?
So I just want to follow up on the answers to my questions, if I may. Thank you very much. Just for clarity, though, I didn't realize that you were all essentially new. So the corporate memory, the 10-year corporate memory, it doesn't exist. It goes back 18 months. Now, my question would be, one question is, to what extent are you understaffed? You said you're a new team and you're not fully staffed, but how many vacant posts are there? And are there, you know, is there anything critical in that set of vacant posts that are important that have to be filled? Now, on the issue of the monitoring and evaluation, again, you said you haven't had the resources yet to do an analysis of the state of readiness of the centres countrywide. When do you think you would be in a position to undertake that assessment? Because I think it's quite important for us to know that, since we're not in a position to do it ourselves, that X, Y, and Z municipality, these are the problems. This province is at 50% is utterly useless. So we need to get that, and you're the guys who've got to supply it. So I presume you know, I'd love to hear you committing to a program of assessing all the disaster centres countrywide and letting us know what the outcome is. On the issue of organs of state budgeting for disaster response, I'm just curious on who's responsible for ensuring that happens. I know you're saying Transit have their own thing, AXA have their own thing, but it all falls under the auspices of this Act, under this Minister. So if this Minister is responsible for ensuring that all organs of state have disaster plans, does that fall under yourselves to ensure that they all have them, in which case presumably you are monitoring them and ascertaining their effectiveness, or is there another process to ensure that they happen and you just happen to sit on the side and you can look at them if you want to or participate? But do you actually have a role to ensure that that happens and the Act is complied with, and to what extent? And when it says all organs of state, I mean, the obvious ones that you refer to are great, but how far does that phrase actually go? What does it mean by all organs? Does it mean some organs, or does it mean all? Because if it means all, then it's a very much broader than the obvious ones that you and I might think of, and I'd like to know what it really means. And then lastly, nobody did comment on the volunteer program yet.
I just want to add one maybe before your responses. Okay. In your last, you once visited one center in Gauteng.
which they claimed it's the big center in South Africa. And also we were proud to hear that they were deployed in Haiti to rescue some community members there. We've seen on TVs raising South African flags after founding those bodies. And those machines that were used there were of a high international standard. And now we, in your last presentation, when asking about that one, we said that big center with all the resources and the material inside there, it's like a white elephant. It's now a white elephant. I just want to check what an achievement we are even internationally recognized about the work South Africa contributed in rescuing Haiti people, and now that center, it seems like it's a white elephant. If you can comment on that one, I've recognized Honorable Nkosi Mandela.
Thanks, Chair. I see we somewhat now jumping to follow-up questions that my questions initially have not been answered. Now, I want to ask again, in the Eastern Cape, is the disaster management center there? And if there is, how long does it take to attend to a disaster? And I've specifically talked to the disaster in Ujuja and in Mvezo area where I come from in Ward 20, which occurred on the 22nd of December 2010. There still has not been any support systems that have been rendered to that community. And I'd like to know, how long does it take for the centers to restore the families back to their dignified manner of living? If you look at the other areas, the portfolio committee went out to KZN. Will it take 2 years to also ensure that we bring about stability in that environment? But while we are posing follow-up questions, Chair, there's a slide that is currently showing now. We seem to have just numbers there, and I don't particularly know how it serves us that human settlements, the 7,175 damaged infrastructure, where, in what provinces, how can we access that information? So we all come from different constituencies. If KSD municipality is one of those areas, I want to know. I want to know how many families have been affected and how long will it take to restore those houses. It goes for education, 342. Where are these education facilities? In what provinces, in what municipalities? Can we get a proper report on this that has been outlined here? So we can know as a portfolio committee, when we want to do oversight, where do we go and find out these things that have been put forward here? Thank you, sir.
Mine, Chase, is only one. I would like to know how many disaster centers do we have in national, so that we can be sure. The reason why I'm asking you that is that if you have one per district, where that district, which are so vast, that if you travel from one end to another end, it's about 400 kilometers. And then, and if it is a disaster now, when will you arrive at point A from point B? If you are having one per district, or are you intending to have each and every local municipality in the center so that you could cover the everything? Thanks, sir.
Thanks, Chief. Just clarity again, Chair. I don't think this has been 100% clarified for me. KZN, Mudhouse collapses. It's on a farm, or in a village. Right? People stay in the temporary tent, or I think in that case it was just the plastics that were put up. How is such a case dealt with in terms of relief? It's on, there's no RDP housing. It's in a tribal area where, you know, there's a chief. How such situations dealt with? Because I think that was most of the areas that where we were. And those people were in dire straits. They were really, really in dire straits. So there was no housing. There was no housing in the pipeline. So what is done with those people? They must get out of those tents or those plastics that they're staying under. Thanks, Chief.
It was in Tambanane, Lolo, but in KZN, so to be specific. It was in Tambanane, local municipality, where there were three diseases that we were when there was no help at all.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Again, I'll rely on some of my colleagues to assist. Just to indicate that the team that is currently here is a new team. In terms of the current approved establishment, there aren't very many vacancies. I think there are four vacancies currently, and these are very junior staff.
Maybe before you can, yeah, you can respond. You keep on provoking me. I didn't want to comment on this one, saying that you're a new team, but the department is not new for the first place. And for the second time, if you knew maybe that there would be some, it needs to be your, it means that you have sent a junior official, if I can put it like that, but I thought maybe you fit for the task. And also maybe since Minister is not here, the DG was supposed to be here, or anybody. I don't foresee or think would all of you in your department or in your sector, in that section of your area of focus, you are all new. I won't accept that one. If we knew, then we're going to turn you away, because it means then that you will end up sucking us. You won't be giving us a true reflection of what you are looking forward to.
Honourable Chair, I was just responding that that the Honourable Member that indicated that the average is 18 months that we are there, and the indication of the current vacancy rate that we do have, currently it is, based on the current establishment that there is four, and as I did indicate, the Minister is busy with the review process of the establishment to make sure that it is enhanced so that we can then meet all the requirements of the Disaster Management Act.
So effectively, for the junior, you're
a full house then? That's it, yeah. Chair, the commitment that we do make to deal with the disaster management centres is that we would, hopefully by the end of the current year, we would have done a proper assessment of all the disaster management centres and had a look at all the plans that if they have, and they have put them forward, and do a proper analysis, and then we would be able to then inform the portfolio committee of the current status of disaster management centres in the country. The volunteer program and or Honourable Chair, the issue of the Eastern Cape that the Honourable Member had raised, is that is something that we as an NDMC would have to go and follow up on to see, because we did not receive any declaration of any disaster in terms of that specific area, and we would have to go and do a validate that to make sure that the Eastern Cape had in fact, if they had slipped on that or what the situation was, so that we can deal with that, and then formally then, as the Honourable Member requested, come back so that we can indicate what the situation is with the down there. We will also then, based on the slide that was up that the Honourable Member had said, we do have comprehensive information. So we will make sure that we in a formal document that we do a proper breakdown of exactly what does it mean when we say human settlements and what, how it relates to the specific provinces, and we will make that information available as well.
But I think the department must know now what the working style or the monitoring style or the interaction style of the committee. Always we want to know breakdown, but when preparing this slide, you would know who those questions will be raised up, and to interact with that report, more flesh has been put in that report, it won't give any value that we are doing now. So I think maybe from now we need to, because I think I don't want to go us to take the route of other portfolio committees. I think we've established a good working relationship together with the department. But if time and again you do your things like you are taking chances, we are going to that people, they will forget that last time what they said, and now we'll do this. It will maybe push us to the end of saying that now we need to treat each other in a strong manner, so that all of us at the end we accomplish what we need to accomplish. So I'm saying this, I'll be saying maybe to your fully fledged department, your department bosses, because time and again, every time, if I can check my notebook, every time when doing conclusion, we need some further reports, some further responses from the questions. Information is not enough. I think by now you have been now knowing how is this committee working, and the interrogation between ourselves, and you know what did they want, and also not forgetting that we trace back before, when preparing our meetings, we trace back and we'll know what you have said, and then this cut and paste thing, we notice them very well. But all in all, I'm not intimidating you, you can continue maybe on your responses.
We usually DDG or DDG or whatever it is, we usually be specific. When we were saying that Eastern Cape, the district is Chrisani, and then the local municipality in Sinsikayethu, and then the place in Namama. We usually be specific. If now you are not going to go back and check your minutes, it's just a plea. When you are living here, sit down and check your minutes so that we can reflect to what we ask you when you're coming back. Just a plea now.
Thank you, Honourable Member. We will surely do that. Just to indicate that some of the follow-up questions, Mahanua and Modi will deal with as well.
Thanks, Jefferson and Honourable Members. To respond to your follow-up question, what I tried to mean was that awareness campaigns are dealt with all the risks that the provinces, the municipalities and communities are vulnerable to. We're not only focusing on fires. What I tried to mean was that during winter season, most of the Indian provinces, they focus on fires because that is the risk that they are exposed to during that time. We are doing all the risks that, you know, within the country or the province, we look at them, a frequent risk that is happening within the municipalities, then they will then focus much of the training or awareness campaign on that. But we're doing everything, you know, that we are vulnerable to. Thank you.
The manual and materials used?
We've got the leaflets, the brochures that we will then send you, because it's also on our website. We have published them on the website. So we'll then also ensure that they are being submitted to you. Okay, thank you. We'll do that.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. I'm going to try and answer also one of the questions which I think we did not answer. The question that says, our immediate grant funding, does it include social development? When the grant funding is legislated in the DORA, before it even goes into the DORA, what we do is we get a framework from National Treasury. And what we do with the framework is we send it to the provinces so that the provinces can also provide their inputs. And the framework clearly stipulates that the immediate funding will be only distributed when the relevant sector departments have exhausted the emergency funding that they have. For instance, social development as humanitarian relief fund, if they run out of that fund, then that's where we come in. The Department of Housing has what is called an emergency housing grant, so that when a house is completely damaged, then the provincial Department of Human Settlements should quickly go in, even before coming to us, and use that emergency funding to put a temporary structure. All the provinces are aware of how much a temporary structure costs, because it's within that policy that Human Settlements has actually put in place. And in an event, a province comes to us and says the Human Settlements has used all its money, because sometimes you find that two or three houses are burnt or they are destroyed, and it does not fit the definition of a disaster. The provincial department within the province can access that money quickly and move into making sure that there's a temporary structure that is built. So that is the first part. The second part relates to the speed at which these provinces move to say to a municipality, within the MFMA, Section 29, as a municipality, this is the money that we can use, depending, of course, on the how big a municipality is, if they have revenue. And if a municipality does not have that, and if they quickly escalate that to the province, then the province must go in. And this is why we have, in the presentation, included Section 26, the 26, of the MFMA, where the MEC, 20, yeah, that's 26. MFMA is Section 29. The PFMA for the provinces is Section 26, where the MEC can actually reprioritize and make sure that communities are attended to as speedily as possible, because this is unavoidable, and it's an unavoidable situation. And provinces can then request that money through the adjustment budget. And in an event that a province does not have the money, or they have utilized all their resources, then this then is escalated to national, where the minister can then evoke Section 16 of the PMFA, and this is where now all, some of the money will come from. So some of the sector departments have money, and provinces and municipalities in terms of intergovernmental relations can also do that. And let me also, Chair and Honorable Members, say that our role as NDMC is more of coordination. And I think in this current financial year, we actually moved in as quickly as possible to assist, to go and assist in Mpumalanga. That's why before they could even request the immediate funding, they attended to the house that we just showed there, through their own funding, where the Premier had asked all the MECs to go and reprioritize. And by the time they received the 47 million, some of the infrastructure had already been attended to, because some of the communities were cut off. Because the Premier said, let's use legislation to be able to move in as quickly as possible. With regards to how long it takes to do the verification, Chair and Honorable Members, what is happening is that when we get into the province, what you find out is that the information that they have given us during the verification process, you find that some of the houses you can't find, some of the roads you can't find, the very people who gave you information are sort of struggling to say, this is the house,
this is the school. So it takes even more time for us to be able to do the verification as quickly as possible. The last part, Chair, is with regards to mud houses. The policy of the Department of Human Settlements is that you can't replace a mud house with another mud house. So in an event where a mud house has been completely damaged, then an RDP house is costed so that when the money comes to the Department of Human Settlements, then these people an RDP house is built. Human Settlements has also told us, because after that meeting where I was with honorable members, we also had to go back and to have a meeting with Human Settlements. They also said that within their policy, there is a clause that begins to say, if a person, this person whose house is completely damaged, was on the waiting list, then the province can move these people to, you know, up, so that an RDP house is built as soon as possible. So it is these intergovernmental relations, coordination that we are strengthening currently. And I think it's actually now beginning to show some results, because we were able to go to KZN and say to National Human Settlements, give us a list of your people who are on the waiting list. And during the verification process, Chair, we also found out that some of the damaged houses, RDP houses, had been built already. However, the province had not updated their statistics to say this person now has a house. With regards to Eastern Cape, Babu Machob, I think during the 2010-11 disasters, Eastern Cape did receive some money. So what we will do, we will then go back and check if the houses you are talking about are not the houses that were damaged in 2010-11, because that money has been allocated. Then we will follow it with the beneficiary list, because we have statistics in terms of this is the beneficiary list, that when the money flows into the province, these are the people who are eligible to be able to receive RDP houses. Thank you, Chair.
There's two questions I still don't have the answers to, I think. What is your volunteer program? Did I miss it? Are you coming? Oh, okay. And then the other one, just to remind you, was the what is your responsibility in respect to other organs of state, your legal responsibility?
You can continue.
Thank you. In terms of volunteers, the Disaster Management Act specifically provides for the establishment of a unit of volunteers on a municipal level, so for district municipalities or metro municipalities. So the responsibility for managing those units lies with the municipalities, the centres, and the National Disaster Management Centre has also promulgated regulations during 2010, December 2010, and the regulations specifically provides for the, you know, the detail of the volunteers, how it should function, the uniform, and how they should report, and all of those things, and also issues of insurance and that. So on that side, that is currently what is in place in terms of the volunteers, if that is adequate. Yes. We do not currently have a database to be able on the national level, but each local centre or municipal centre has that detail available.
What is your in that regard? What is your recruiting strategy? And also, I just want to check not on the broader house of the department, maybe on a section as National Disaster Management Centre. Do you have any buzzers that you issued out so that you'll be able to recruit and take on board those people who need to be trained so that you'll be able to strengthen those disaster centers down in the provinces?
Thanks, Chairperson. Part of our
a program within the education and training.
Before I respond, in your recruitment strategy, because we, it's not our first time as this government to be to govern the country, what about experiences from retired people who are doing the very same work before in apartheid era? Are you trying to take them on board, in, even if when you're doing your education, your program, the awareness program in communities?
Thanks, Chairperson. Let me just answer the first part of the question with regard to looking at academic recruitment of, you know, people or youth who wants to venture into the disaster management career. We have a program whereby we offer bursaries to students, and
but when coming into the presentation, why do you hide this information? Because it's supposed to be part of your presentation so that we'll know and be able to monitor.
All right, thanks, Jefferson, again. We've got a program where we are offering bursaries to students. We're using different universities. Currently, we offering bursaries, especially for the university. We are supporting University of Free State and University of Northwest. And now other universities, because they didn't have disaster management as a faculty within their curricula, we are now encouraging them to venture into the disaster management using developing a faculty within that. So currently we've got two new universities that we are negotiating with, University of Venda, University of Limpopo, and also University of KZN. We are busy, Zululand, we are busy with them coming up with an MOU to ensure that other students also can also go to those universities. So we are currently, we've got about plus minus 26 students that have been enrolled with the universities. And then what they do after they've completed their researches are sent to us so that can be used for public knowledge. And even during their graduation, we also take part and go and ensure that there is proper monitoring of their completion of their studies. And what we do, we advertise on localized newspaper, for example, the Daily Sun, where anybody can access it so that they can apply. Like now, advert is in en route to the media so that they can be able to apply. Then using the Daily Sun so far is the newspaper that we have used to advertise.
Thanks for the presentation. Hoping that you are not hard on you today. I feel like I see you that today you are not having such smiles, but you know, man, every time the chairperson is flexible, it's only today maybe if you felt like that. Honorable members, thanks for the presentation and thanks for coming before the portfolio committee. I think my next time when coming before the portfolio committee, we'll all remind each other what possible expectations that the portfolio committee will need. Even if in the invitation you don't even specify what is it, but you bring all the information, all the work that you are doing, even if you can specify today we are focusing on funds, but when doing your presentation, I think you can bring also that we'll be able to get exactly what you are doing. Thanks for coming before the portfolio committee. Wendy?
Sorry, Chair, can we maybe just get an indication of when we'll get the report on the disbursements that have been made to previous disaster? Because I think that is long outstanding. Thank
also,
you.
The report which is having breakdowns that Honorable Nkosi Mandela is having, I think Sharon's going to liaise with. Sharon's going to liaise with the department. I'm told we haven't received that report that we asked for. It will liaise with you so that you'll be able to get that report. Thanks for coming. Honourable members, maybe before we close the meeting, we've got some 2 sets of minutes. I'll allow the department maybe for 5 minutes to go so that we'll continue adopting the 2 sets of minutes.
Page 3.
Nothing. Any mover for the adoption of this minute? The 7th? Oinama moves and Bonhomo 2nd. Thanks. The minutes of the 14th? Page 1? Page 2? Page 3. Speechless. Page 4. Page 5. I'm too quick. But I thought maybe you've gone through the minutes. Page 6. If there are no corrections, no amendments, no, there are the true reflection, I would like to ask any mover. Peter moves, Mambi Chetelo seconds the adoption of this minute. Thanks, honorable members. I also want to try and congratulate the secretary this time. I think also myself, because I'm also a teacher, I do make some corrections and some additions in the minutes, that at least I've seen this time there true reflection of what aspired, and also to thank her that every time we make some comments, see just or recommendations on how we want to see our minutes to look like, she does that. Last week I was attending a chairperson's meeting by many chairpersons, that but reflects to the kind of members of staff that we have. Many chairpersons are having crisis on minutes capturing, but our committee was one of those who are on par with minutes capturing, because they even highlighted that the necessity or why these minutes are so important. One day we'll discuss something, maybe an NGO or media or one of us take us to court on some other discussions that or other decisions that we manage to take. The first thing that they would need to see is minutes. So the minutes are so important that they need to be our true reflection, and it reflects ourselves with our names at the first page. There's no sharing name here. It's our names. When it's taken to anywhere, to websites, to anywhere they see us,